Good evening, folks. It's 7 o'clock on Monday evening, March the 18th. And tonight's regularly scheduled City Council meeting is called to order. I kindly ask our city clerk to take the roll call.
Chuck Brown.
Here.
Don Cummings.
Here.
Dorothy Flanagan.
Here.
Sam Hill. Dean Kilberg.
Here.
Craig Maladra.
Here.
Richard Marks.
Here.
Ron Singer.
Here.
Don Vogelsberg.
Here.
We begin tonight with the Pledge of Allegiance, like we do at all of our City Council meetings. And I would like to ask our Chief of Police, Steve Mixon, to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Chief. No slight to you, Chief Olson, from the Fire Department, of course, but you carry water, they carry something else, so it's just a matter of safety. So. We do have a full agenda tonight, folks. It's a good agenda. Item 3 on the agenda is the public hearing and special items and presentations. We have, for your delight and enjoyment this evening, the fiscal year 2013-14 proposed budget presentation. And our city administrator, Mrs. McKittrick, will be leading this presentation. As is customary, we would kindly ask the city council members and the audience as well to hold all questions until after the presentation so we can get through it. I believe there are 217 slides.
218.
Don't panic. There's a quarter of that. The floor is yours, Mary, whenever you're ready.
Thank you.
And I think for the benefit of all those watching at home and, of course, those with us tonight, I think it'd be helpful if you shared with all of us your tenure with the city. Now that it's been a week.
Thank you, Mayor. I have been with the city for a little over 14 years. First 9 years as assistant city administrator and the last 5 as city administrator. Thank you. Good evening, everyone. This evening, I'd like to present to you the 32 proposed budgets of the city. This includes the operating general fund, the electric fund, the water and wastewater fund, and their related capital budgets, as well as the miscellaneous budgets. You will recall that over the past 5 years in presenting each of these budgets to you, I've spoken about managing the challenges, wants versus needs, good governance, and living within our means. This year, my focus is fiscal stability. The city's fiscal stability has been addressed by the City Council consistently over the past 5 years by looking at both short and long-term needs, by reducing spending where possible within the context of continuing to provide high-quality customer service, as well as strengthening communications and enhancing transparency with all stakeholders of the community. The city's budgets combined make up the financial plan for the city that establishes the direction for all city government programs and services for the coming fiscal year. It represents the synthesis of council guidance and staff recommendations on how to best accomplish city council goals and respond to community needs in accordance with available resources, established policies, and best administrative practices. Prior years' decisions in developing the budget have been challenging, as the city has adopted multiple budget balancing measures since fiscal year 2008-2009. For example, this year's proposed general fund is $2 million less than it was 5 years ago in fiscal year 2008-2009. Most of the expenditure reductions that the city has made over the past 5 years include deferred capital improvements, reducing or freezing staffing levels, and decreasing operational expenditures. Our current staffing levels are less than they were in 2004, and the recent staffing analysis report indicated that we are understaffed. As a result, we have seen some longer response times to customer requests and have had to modify some of our operations to accommodate fewer resources. In short, we're having difficulty keeping up because, as you know, The demand for services and the number of citizens that we serve has not declined. Workforce strategies incorporated into the budget process over the past 5 years have included freezing staffing levels, eliminating positions where possible, implementing voluntary furloughs, and replacing full-time staff with part-time positions. Fortunately, many current fiscal indicators point to an economic recovery at the national, state, and local levels, evidenced most clearly by modest increases in the city's sales tax and income tax receipts. Although we are seeing some stabilization in this regard, the assessed value of taxable property has declined. Property tax revenue was temporarily insulated from the economic downturn as the calculation of taxable property uses a 3-year averaging of property values pursuant to state law. For the 2008 and 2009 levies, the assessed value of taxable property was virtually flat. But for the 2010 levy, the value decreased by more than 4%. And for the 2011 levy, the value decreased by more than 6%. And for the 2012 levy, the value decreased again by nearly 3%. In addition, it should be noted that of the total property in the city, only about 2/3 is being taxed. Nearly 30% of our properties are tax exempt because they're classified as not-for-profit, religious, or government. That means that those who do pay property taxes make up the difference for those who don't. The budget for fiscal year 2013-14 reflects these revenue realities and requires continued vigilance to balance the budget structurally to achieve the following goals: providing a high level of service to the community and making good progress on achieving the council's vision and goals, operating a lean organization as a result of hiring excellent employees and conducting necessary belt tightening over the past few years, delivering high value to the community in a cost-effective and efficient manner. The city's budgets and service plans maintain a good balance between operating and capital needs, as well as between basic services, administrative support, and oversight. Protecting the interests of citizens and promoting business activity. Prioritizing and emphasizing programs and services that are reflective of the long-range strategic plan for the community established by the City Council. Building consensus among decision makers on the existence and importance of community values. Requiring process transparency. Focusing on specific financial and budgetary policies adopted by the Council. Insisting on the fundamentals of accountability, the pursuit of efficiency, and the necessity of effectiveness. Balancing the gradual and immediate needs of the community. Acknowledging and concentrating on decisions that positively impact the common good. And ultimately, speaking with one voice when public policy making votes are tallied. The projected general fund balance for the end of fiscal year 13-14 meets the financial policy adopted by the City Council in 2009 by providing reserves in the amount of nearly $4.2 million, which is just over 25%, or about 93 days of the general fund operating budget. These factors allow the proposed budget to restore a portion of the reductions taken in prior years in order to make a greater capital investment, address staffing needs, and provide better and more responsive communications. Projected revenues have been accurately estimated, and projected expenses have been monitored consistently to ensure that we continue our vigilance of fiscal conservatism. The message of fiscal stability is rooted in the budgets that have been prepared with the goal of balancing the resources provided by our community against the demand for services, programs, and projects, keeping fees and charges within adequate and responsible levels, and ensuring that the city's policymaking is sufficient to allow economic growth and provision of core public services. As a result of the public policy principles and strategies established by this City Council, as well as the challenging work of our professional and dedicated staff, a balanced budget is presented to you this evening for the 2013-2014 fiscal year that demonstrates the city's ability to achieve fiscal stability. With that, I want to go on through the presentation and just start with the budget schedule. As you all know, we started back in November with our strategic planning workshop, prioritizing goals, which were then distributed after approval by the council to the department heads and incorporated into their department goals and their budgets. Revenues over a five-year trend. I thought you would be interested in looking at the electric, which is shown on top, the general fund in the middle, and then the water on fund on the bottom. And you can see some movement there up and down over the past 5 years. The property tax bill. As you know, the city of Geneva's portion, average portion, of any homeowner's tax property tax bill is 8%. We are responsible for that and have jurisdiction over that. This is the property tax levy distribution. This is a breakdown. It's similar to the pie chart that I just showed, and I'll just back up to show you that a little bit. But of that 8%, this is how it's broken down in our levy. The property tax revenues, these are revenues that we collect in our levy minus the debt. So everything else is combined to a $4.6 million revenue stream for us in 2012. The equalized assessed value, and here you can see it in this line chart of how it's fallen since 2008. And as you know, as the assessed value decreases, then the tax rate, if you're keeping the same dollar figure that you're levying for, will automatically increase. This is a breakdown of our general fund revenues, and you can see that the amended budget of where we projected revenues, our year-end estimate, and then where that will be coming in as a percentage of the budget. And as you can see, overall, we were just slightly above our projections, which is a good thing. Sales tax revenues, again, I think as I indicated at the beginning of my presentation, you can see a slight incline, those going back up, and that's a positive trend for us. Other communities are seeing the same thing. Unfortunately, motor fuel tax is not seeing an incline. It's seeing a decline. It's not that much difference in the big picture from 1999-2000 to where it is now. It was about 500,000 back then. It's about 500,000 now. Income tax. This is another one where we project about $2 million a year, and this has a huge impact on our budget. And again, you can see the incline. You can see the trend positively going up. I might add that these numbers for the income tax, motor fuel tax, personal property replacement tax, those projections are based on Illinois Municipal League figures that they give us. And we calculate those based on our population, but we get those figures. We look at trends from previous years. We look at the IML projections, and then we decide whether or not we think that those are pretty close to being right on, and that's what we're using this year, the Illinois Municipal League projections. So, personal property replacement tax revenues, you may recall this is one of the funds, one of our local government distributive funds that the state has deemed necessary to use some of those monies from for various purposes. In looking at the financial stability, if you break down the 32 budgets or the 32 funds that we have, this is how it breaks down overall. The budget overview, just from the 30,000-foot view, the city's budgets across all funds, 32 of them, total $83,698,248. It is a difference of about $10 million between this year and last year. And that difference comes from about $1 million added to the general fund because we're putting the MFT funds, it's an accounting practice, we're putting the MFT in our general fund. That's where we're tracking it. In addition to the almost $500,000 levy for police pension, we're adding an additional $500,000 to try to catch up, almost just under $1 million to police pension fund. Capital projects, we're getting a grant for $1.25 million for the East State Street ITEP, so we have to show that as an expenditure as well. And then about $750,000 for different miscellaneous capital projects. The enterprise funds, that added about $7 million, primarily for capital, for electric and water. As those revenues increase, we return those revenues as an investment into capital projects for both of those enterprise funds. You recall we have in the budget already about a $3.5 million estimate for the parking deck, third level. We're adding $1.25 million to that because that equates to the lowest bid that we received. And right now we're working with Metra to try to convince them to add the 1.25 so that it's completely taken care of by grant money. And then $90,000 to refuse because we're proposing to consider outsourcing for the street sweeping, and that would go on to the refuse bill. And again, we have to show the expenditure even though the revenue is coming in. General fund summary. These are the totals across the last 3 years and the proposed budget as well. That surplus deficit shows that we would be adding another $35,000 to our fund balance, or that 93-day reserves that we have. The general fund revenues. These are, again, the revenues, as we showed before, for the different streams of revenue that we have. And this just breaks it down a little bit more than the pie chart so that you can see where all of the general fund revenues come from. And as you can see, sales tax is by far, you know, our leading revenue, followed by property tax. General fund expenditures. When you break down the expenditures, the proposed expenditures, you'll see that 38% of the general fund expenditures go to police, 23% goes to fire, 14% each go to streets, administrative services, and then you have the smaller departments broken down. Community development, 5%, engineering and storm drainage, 3%, economic development, 1%. City Administrator's Office and Legislative, 1% each. Department Program Highlights. In the City Administrator's Office, we're asking to establish a communications position. We're asking to continue with a capital project, continue the City Hall Gardens, the phase two of that. In Administrative Services, we are proposing to increase the payroll specialist hours from 800 per year to 1,040 per year, which is still part-time. Community development, as you know, we've been required by the state to hire a plumbing inspector. This is an independent contractor. This is not an employee. So this person would not fall under our workers' compensation or benefits. Community development will also be undertaking the multi-community housing plan. Economic development will be working on the business district feasibility project. They are looking to work with council on setting policy direction to develop or not an incentive policy. And then also, Ellen and staff will be working closely with the county on redevelopment of the Fabian property. The police department, this is a new program this year that we're proposing. This is a victims advocacy program working with AID. The fire department is establishing a new selection process for attendance at the firefighter basic course and also preparation courses for the accreditation manager. In public works, there's several programs that they're looking, of course, to include this year, and one of them is the parking garage third level. And as I mentioned, we're working with Metra and the UP trying to get that additional funding for that grant. We're looking at outsourcing the street sweeping. East State Street Reconstruction, that's the ITEP $1.2 million grant that we received. State Street Brick Replacement, that's an ongoing project that we've been doing for the last few years. We have had some questions in that regard, just for your information, from the public asking why we're replacing the bricks when it doesn't appear that there's anything wrong with them. If you pick the bricks up and look underneath, there's a lot wrong with them. They're deteriorating. So we're replacing those concrete bricks with clay bricks, and we believe that those will last much longer. So it's really a public safety issue. The filtration unit at the water treatment facility, I'm not going to even begin to explain this to you, except that we can reuse this water, reclaim it, and I'll let our Superintendent Van Gescom answer your questions on that one, if he doesn't mind. And then, of course, our ongoing electric cable replacement program that we've been doing for the past 9 years. Some of our capital improvement projects from our general capital include building safety equipment, building improvements, personal protective safety equipment, computer upgrades, vehicles, wayfinding signage downtown, machinery and equipment, and then, of course, the business district study. Our infrastructure capital projects fund, this comes from the sales tax referendum money, will be completed with West, or complete, be used for Western Avenue project, 3rd Street Pedestrian Mall, curb and sidewalks, City Hall Gardens, tree replacement, that's the EAB program, and our street program. This is a list of the proposed streets that we have in this upcoming year's program. This is a breakdown of our special service areas. We are contributing $90,000 from the general fund to SSA number one. And otherwise, they're fairly stable each year. Fisher Farms did go up, again, at the request of the homeowners. They want to pay more so that they can have more services and invest more in their infrastructure. Special revenue funds or budgets. This is the breakdown of all of the different special revenue funds. Motor fuel tax, 505, 735. That's what we're receiving from the state. Cultural Arts Commission, $39,340. There is no contribution from the general fund to that. That's primarily monies that they have earned through fundraising efforts. SPAC, $11,500. That does include a $5,000 contribution from the general fund because the money that is in their balance is earned by only one of their subcommittees, and that's NRC. They sell the rain barrels, and I believe that they did have they had a fundraiser as well. But the International Cultural Exchange, student government, and the others do not have fundraisers, so they do look to the city to be supported for their expenses. Beautification Committee, $14,000 budgeted this year. There is no general fund contribution to that fund. Tourism, this is hotel motel tax. That's $210,000. TRICOM, this is their budget approved by their board, and as I mentioned before, the City of Geneva, through an intergovernmental agreement, serves as the legal instrument to approve their budget. And then, of course, the Mental Health Board. This is the primarily the distribution. There's a little bit $2,000 or $3,000 in there for general expenses for their administrative services or their administrative assistance that they receive, but it's primarily the distribution that they do in December of each year. Debt service, $1.7 million this year. Enterprise funds include refuse at $464,000, cemetery $59,000, commuter parking $5.285, and again, this includes the third level of the parking deck, which is why that's as high as it is. Electric $37,360, and water at $10,551,000. Electric fund revenues, as you can see, the electric sales from customers make up 99% of electric revenues. Electric fund expenditures are broken down. The purchase power, of course, this is the power that we buy currently from Exelon. We have debt service, capital, operation and maintenance, other expenses, and then generation. Electric capital, this year electric is planning on generation facility upgrades and maintenance, meter replacements, underground cable replacement, again, as I just to reiterate, 9 years of this program, vehicle replacement, computer replacements, machinery and equipment. Water and wastewater fund revenues, as you can see, not quite as much as electric, but the majority of revenues for the water and wastewater funds come from water sales, 60%. 34% comes from sewer sales. Water and wastewater fund expenditures, most of the expenditures go to debt service. Water capital projects, they would like to continue on with water main replacement, water meter replacements, water treatment facility maintenance, fire hydrant replacement, sanitary sewer rehabilitation, vehicles, I believe it's one vehicle, and machinery and equipment. With regard to workforce planning, this is based on our strategic plan for 2017, Vision 5, community needs and desires are effectively and efficiently balanced with available resources. And goal three of our strategic plan under that vision is to maintain and enhance high quality city services. So when we're looking at changing any portion of our workforce, we always go back to the strategic plan to try to maintain the objective listed therein. Over the past 5 years, as I indicated, our expenditure reduction strategies have included furloughs, union contract wage concessions, reduction in non-emergency overtime, no education reimbursement, limited professional development, and reduction in force through attrition. If you look at our full-time employees, right now we're at 142. We're asking to hire one more for next year. And you can look back to 2004 and compare to where we are, where we were then and where we are now, which reinforces what I was saying about how it's getting more difficult to keep up with the demand. In 2007-08, we were at 157 full-time employees, and next year we're asking for one additional to make it 143 full-time employees. The breakdown is approximate, 15% managerial, 37% union, and 48% non-union. In 2006, the City Council adopted a compensation system wherein every year we do an annual market survey of 25 comparable communities, and every 5 years we do a comprehensive wage and benefits survey. We use the same 25 communities every year to be consistent. This year, our market survey resulted in the average wage increase of 2.58%. The median was 2.5%, and the mode was 2%. For the merit-based wage increases, that means that those employees, non-union, would be receiving either a 0%, a 1.5%, or a maximum of 2.5% based on their performance evaluation over the past 12 months. And as you know, we do two performance evaluations per year for all employees. Wages relative to non-union, again, that would be up to 2.5% based on their performance evaluation score if they exceed expectations. Last year, I believe approximately 20% did not receive any wage increase, didn't receive the maximum. Electric is in their contract that you've approved previously, and that has a 2.5% increase. The police contract that's been approved already is a 3% plus a step, and that contract expires 2015. And then fire is a 2.5% plus a step, and that expires 2016. The 2.5% wage increase impacts on budgets. The impact on the general fund is just under $8,000. Miscellaneous funds, almost 21,000. Electric fund, it's actually a deficit because we had an employee retire. So even with the increase and you take away the employee's salary and benefits, or salary, I guess, that was there, that's no longer there, it shows a reduction. And then same with water and wastewater. And that, the water and wastewater fund shows a reduction because we changed allocations. As you know, every year we look at wage allocations, and there are many of us, myself included, where we allocate our salaries out to the different funds. For example, this coming year, I will be spending a lot more time working on TIF-related issues. So I changed that. So I increased that. I can't remember. Stephanie, you've got the numbers. But it was a few percentage points based on the – I'm sorry, 10%, based on the anticipated work that we'll be doing or time that we think that we'll be spending related to those different funds. Wage increases, union versus non-union, all full-time union and non-union equates to $193,429. That's a breakdown of union employees, $109,620, and non-union, $83,809. Total wages and benefits are what percent of the budget? These came from a couple of questions that we got last year as a follow-up, and I thought that it would be interesting just to include them this year for your information. That would be 24.41%. What percent did wages and benefits increase over budgeted fiscal year, over the current budgeted fiscal year? That would be 5%. Total pension benefits are what percent of the budget? That's 2.5%. Police and fire make up 1.5% for a total of 56 employees. IMRF equates to 1% of the budget for covering 91 employees. Now, this does not include TRICOM. We excluded TRICOM from that. This is just a graph that I wanted to show you. The actual contribution bars are in green, and the recommended contribution are in orange, just to show you where we've been. And you can see in 2011, 2012, the recommended contribution was higher than what we felt we could afford to contribute to that. And a lot of that has to do with loss on investment returns, because when there's fewer investment returns, then the employer has to make up the difference. Police pension, you can see how that has grown over the past 12 years. The recommended contribution in orange and the blue bar is the actual contribution. This year, we're meeting the recommended contribution. Fire pension, again, the actual contribution is in red and the recommended contribution is in orange. In referring to financial stability, I just wanted to go back and look at a couple of outside sources and what they're saying about the city's financial stability. And this was from last year, last fall, in 2012, when Moody's reaffirmed our AA2 bond rating. And they said, assignment of the AA2 rating reflects the city's stable financial operations supported by growing reserves, modestly sized tax base located in the Chicago, which is geo-rated AA3, AA2 is better, metropolitan area, and manageable debt levels. The city's financial operations will likely remain stable as a result of recent expenditure reductions and conservative budget estimates, which have increased general fund reserves. The GFOA Budget Presentation Award. The GFOA said, the award represents a significant achievement by the entity. It reflects the commitment of the governing body and staff to meeting the highest principles of governmental budgeting. In order to receive the budget award, the entity had to satisfy nationally recognized guidelines for effective budget presentation. These guidelines are designed to assess how well an entity's budget serves as a policy document, a financial plan, an operations guide, and a communications device. The budget document must be rated proficient in all four categories and the 14 mandatory criteria within those categories in order to receive the award. The audit. The overall financial position of the city is sound. The governmental funds and fund balance increased during the fiscal year in spite of the economic downturn. Expenditure constraints included a hiring freeze, voluntary employee furlough program, limited professional development, and deferred capital projects. Utility rates in the city's proprietary funds are monitored to ensure operating and capital costs are adequately covered. And most recently, from the staffing analysis, financial trend analysis, overall Geneva is at average to above average financial condition compared to other cities. The city has taken steps to address the difficult fiscal times and continues to do so. Geneva has created a good document on the financial policies for the city. These fiscal policies are comprehensive and are the base for many of the assumptions that currently go into the financial planning for the city. Establishing financial policies helps city policy officials view their present approach to financial management from an overall long-range vantage point and establish financial performance goals for the city. These financial performance goals help to provide the community a stable financial picture over the long term. In conclusion, the proposed budget is a business plan for the upcoming fiscal year that responds appropriately and adequately to current economic conditions. It retains core services for residents and businesses and begins to reinvest in needed areas. It recognizes employees who provide excellent customer service. And finally, we have a budget that demonstrates financial stability accomplished through a series of fiscally conservative choices and good governance by the City Council. Thank you. I would just add that, as we did last year, I would like to propose that you take the we will obviously take questions tonight, and we have staff here to answer any specifics. But also over the next week, if you would like to take that time and send questions, then we'll come back next week after we've had time to research them if we don't have the answers tonight, or if you think of something during the week that you would like to add to that. So with that.
Thank you, Mrs. McKittrick. At this time, it's appropriate to invite any member of the City Council to ask our city administrator a question and or the department heads who are present, including why Ellen can't find the lights that work in the council chamber. And it's like a strobe light. Looks like Brenda Shorey's moving out there. It's like questions or comments for Mrs. McKittrick from the dais. Alderman Maladra.
So Mary, can you send us a copy of the presentation you just walked through?
Yeah, actually, I was going to put it on the website as well for the public. All of our other presentations are up there too from previous years. But yes, I will send that out to you directly and post that on the city's website for our citizens to take a look.
Thank you,
Alderman Singer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mary, when you were showing us the number of employees going back to the year 2007 and then bringing it forward up to 212. Certainly there was a tremendous decrease as to number of employees. I think it might be a good idea if you might have incorporated what the population of our city was at that particular point in time in 207 and then going forward to the 212 number.
I believe it was 19,521 or thereabouts. It was just under 20,000 mm-hmm. back in 07, so we've grown by 3,000 since then.
Mm-hmm.
Approximately.
Yeah, isn't it interesting how our population has grown and our services and the numbers of people that we've hired that are employed has diminished?
Yes.
Thank you.
And we needed to do that. I mean, we responded
Understood.
To the economy, and that's the reason why. It's
yep.
it's not because we felt that, we had too many employees, but we felt that restructuring, reorganizing where necessary, and through attrition, not filling those vacancies until we became more financially stable
mm-hmm.
was the appropriate reaction.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're welcome. Alderman Flanagan.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I guess something came to my head when Alderman Singer asked about that, the population versus what we're, the number of employees we had then and back then. Which department suffered the most? Do you know kind of which department? Would it be Public Works? Would it be?
I would say it was fairly spread out, actually.
Apart.
Yeah, it was. I would say spread out across the organization.
So everybody kind of felt the pinch, so
right.
to say.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You mentioned the pension, and you showed a graph. You showed the decreases that were prior to where we caught up now. Do we have to play catch up with all those past years?
We have, by state statute, the law requires that we're 90% funded by 2033.
I remember that.
Now, so everyone is saying that they expect that that will change, that that law won't stand, that they'll extend that out even further. But based on our conversation over the past year or two, the council has directed me to try to contribute more, particularly to police. Because
Correct.
That was growing at a faster rate than we could contribute, and so we were getting further behind each year.
It looks like we were behind like 3 or 4 years, basically, from what I saw.
Because
from the
it spiked up
right.
so much. And again, a lot has to do with a poor return on investments, and every pension felt that.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Anyone else in the audience? Anyone else? Alderman Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. In our packet, which is also available on the web, there is more detailed worksheets on all the various funds, all the sub-items that contribute. I presume that's completely consistent, so when we look at your presentation, the numbers will all approximately balance.
They better.
They're better. Okay, so
but yes, that,
they both
that's
came
what,
from the same
yes.
run through the numbers.
And that's what I was referring to when I was saying, please feel free to send questions based on those spreadsheets, yes. And that is in the packet on the website.
It'll take me more than a few days to go through them. But I'll try to do it in a week. Thank you.
You're welcome.
From the dais, any other member of the city council? Question, Alderman Marks?
Mary, just a couple. The ending balance in the reserve of 4.2 million in reserves. That's just the general fund, right? That's
correct.
Not the SSAs.
That's correct.
Okay. And there's been a lot of I don't know what to call it, coming out of Springfield about taking more of the distributed funds away. Is that reflected in the budget at all, or are we just hoping that? I mean, they keep saying that they may come and grab some of that. Have we planned for that in the budget, or
it's reflected in those funds that they've targeted,
okay.
like the personal property
right.
replacement tax.
Mm-hmm.
Others, we could speculate, but we've been doing that for the last
yeah.
5 years.
I just wondered if we did it. I mean, they toss numbers around all the time, and
right.
I didn't know
right.
if we took that into account, because they haven't done it.
And
did a little
if
bit.
Something happens, we can come back and amend the budget.
Okay.
And that's what we would do.
Yeah.
If those projected revenues, if we saw that those were not forthcoming because of legislation, we would absolutely come back because we're monitoring. Tom and Stephanie and I meet weekly, Wednesday mornings, 9 o'clock, to look at our finances. And so we're constantly monitoring. And if that were to happen, and as you know, I'm monitoring legislation 24/7, sending it to you. And if that were to happen, we would most definitely come back and amend our budget to say, you know, we can't spend as much as we had hoped on this or that because this legislation affects that. So,
The other question I had is, you know, the bricks on 3rd Street have seemed to always cause us a lot of problems over the years. If I remember right, we replace a lot of those every year. State Street. Have we ever looked at the possibility of pouring concrete and stamping them rather than bricks?
Yes.
I mean, okay.
Yes, we have done that. And Dan can speak to the details of that. We did consider that, but we felt replacing with the clay bricks, which are the ones on 3rd Street, those have lasted. It's the concrete ones on State Street that have not. And perhaps I'm guessing that they were less expensive at the time, but they're deteriorating to the point where we're concerned about folks.
Yeah, I know. I see that. I just didn't know if we had considered the concrete.
Yes.
Because on State Street, I don't know.
Do you want to speak to that issue?
We have looked at stamped concrete, but similar to the concrete bricks, concrete is exposed to the salt that we put down and through winter, the color doesn't hold up as well, so it fades, kind of like the concrete bricks that are out there now, and it'll get attacked by the salt. We found good results with the 3rd Street bricks, so that's where we're putting those in. It keeps the color, and those are clay. Keeps the color, and it hasn't been attacked by the salt.
Okay.
We've had good success with that.
I think the aesthetics plays a good part in making the decision as well, doesn't it?
I just didn't think it affected the state as well. that's all I have for now.
Alderman Vogelsberg, then Alderman Kilberg.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Well, first of all, great job from all the department heads on such a good budget. It's hard to believe you could present what took you 4 months in a half hour. So I just had a clarification. What percentage did you say the general fund gives to SSA 1?
$90,000 is what we're contributing this year.
Okay.
I don't recall the percentage right off the top of my head.
All right,
it's about a third. I think it's a little less than a third that we contribute to that fund.
All right, thank you.
We used to contribute two-thirds.
That's why I just wanted to have a reminder.
Yes.
Thank you.
Alderman Kilberg, and then Flanagan again.
As a suggestion, I know that our consultant came back with recommendations as it relates to communications position for the city. I guess I would be interested in possibly communicating with the other governmental bodies in Geneva, that'd be the Park District, School District, and seeing if there might be an opportunity for some type of an intergovernmental agreement where we might share a communications director. And since a lot of as it relates to communications director, I guess I would be interested in your thoughts as it relates to sharing those types of services with the Park District and the School District potentially. And I don't need an answer tonight. I'm just saying at some point in time in this process, if in fact we're going to budget for it, I guess I would like to know the positives and negatives of that type of a potential arrangement.
And I can speak to them and talk. Actually, what I would start with is getting job descriptions. I'm guessing that they probably don't have 24/7 services like we do. I'm looking for someone that can get the information out 24/7 if we've got a power outage, for example. Those kinds of differences I could see right off the bat. They don't. Theirs work, you know, most of those positions work 9 till 5 and send out, you know, ongoing more like press release types of communications. I'm thinking more about the info line that we just set up so that folks can call if they've got, you know, some kind of critical incident going on. But I will most definitely be happy to check with them to see if it's a possibility.
And I was just going to say, they both already have somebody part-time, so they're organized. We should.
I think, actually, they have some full-time employees.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
Alderman Flanagan, then Alderman Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I guess another question came up to me when Dean, Alderman Kilberg was talking. Would this communication position be a 20? We said 24/7. So would they? What type of hours? I mean, she or he can't stay up for 24/7. So I was trying to figure that out.
They would. They would more or less be on call.
Okay. So this person would be on call.
Right. If we have an emergency at night that we need to communicate, then they would be responsible for that.
Interesting. I just wanted to make an observation. From your graph, sales revenue, sales tax revenue, and it's generated by 1% of our staff. That revenue amount, I mean, you know, if you correlate what the economic development portion of the city is, seems to generate the most is like 1%. Remember you mentioned that economic development had 1% of the – I'm phrasing this correctly. It's just – it was interesting to see that sales tax revenue was the highest revenue that
and
we
it
had.
Has been.
Right. And there was only – there was 1% of expenditures.
Oh,
yeah.
Right.
So that's right. Exactly.
Right.
So I just – it was an observation that I made and I thought was kind of bizarre. That's all. It was just an observation.
Alderman Hill, who's lucky as a Illini in the NCAA tournament.
They are lucky to be in the tournament.
I know.
But they'll do well. Nice job, Mary, and very impressive with the figures that show the administration of this city has been very good in the time you've been in charge as the administrator. One of the subjects that I know is near and dear to your heart is the attempt for us to influence the state legislators on the LGDF, the local government distributive funds. And I wonder if you could spend a couple of minutes explaining to our audience what those funds are, how they were built by the local communities, and what some of the legislators in Springfield are attempting to do with it.
Well, in general, I think as everyone knows, the state of Illinois has had issues paying their bills, and right now, obviously, they are looking at all resources when it comes to revenues, fees, as well as taxes. One of the major issues that they're wrestling with happens to be state pensions. Those aren't IMRF, police, or fire. Those are completely separate from those. But they're looking for ways to make up for that loss in fund balance because they've been borrowing from their pension funds over the years. So they've borrowed from our local government distributive funds, the LGDF, as you referred to them, and that's a combination of various revenue streams. That includes income taxes, personal property replacement taxes, motor fuel taxes, and most of those are based on a certain formula multiplied by each community's population, and that's where we get the figures that we get. They have proposed to reduce some of those. The local government sales tax fund, twice since January 1st, they've passed legislation to borrow from that fund. So hopefully those funds will be returned to us. The income tax, they increased, as you know, the income tax from 3 to 5% on individuals, but none of the increase went to municipalities. And they've talked about taking some of the municipal share of the income tax. Years ago, before the 1970 Illinois Constitution and before Home Rule, communities talked in general about implementing their own income taxes in their own communities. The state worked with the municipalities and said, no, you know, don't do that. Instead of each community having its own income tax and its own income tax rate, let's piggyback on the state of Illinois. We will collect it. We will give you a share of that based on your population. So when I send emails to you and communications to say they're going back on their word because they're saying, you know, they said if you don't implement income taxes at the local level, we'll collect it for you. Well, now when they're saying they want to eliminate our portion of it or reduce it, that's really going back on the agreement that we made 30, 40 years ago. And when I say we, I mean communities made with them. So all of those local government distributive funds, in whatever the source is, they're looking at those. In every legislative session, we are challenged, and that's why I'm always encouraging you to pick up the phone and call, which is the best way. If you can talk one-on-one to our local representatives, either in the House or the Senate, to explain to them, and when I can, when I've got the calculations, when IML provides that to us, you know, I always try to let you know what kind of impact that would be on our revenues, how much we would be losing, so that you can actually relay that information to our legislators. So it is an ongoing struggle. Every legislative session, I think that if we don't speak up and if we don't fight for it, I think that those revenues will be taken little by little by the state. So I thank you for those of you that do pick up the phone and call, because it truly does make a difference. I've had many conversations with our legislators and been told by them that it absolutely does. When they receive an email or a phone call from you, it does make a difference. So as I always say, elected officials listen to elected officials.
Thank you very much. And I think they would listen to citizens, too. And,
I'm sure they would.
And I'm sure that if anybody's interested, you could get telephone numbers from Mary, and maybe you could help us call. I seldom get through to a legislator, only one in the past 3 years. But I do talk to their administrative assistants, and I know they pass on the word. We'd have to keep the pressure on, and
we do.
Your help would be appreciated.
And I've even seen some written correspondence that Alderman Kilberg has forwarded to us that he's received, so
good.
Some do respond. Thank you.
Anything else, Alderman Hill?
No, sir. Thank you very much.
Anyone else on the dais? Comments or questions for the city administrator? From the audience, anyone on the questions of the presentation presented this evening? And as Alderman Brown noted, there is a more extensive presentation in the City Council packet, which is available online. And the presentation that Mrs. McKittrick presented is and or will be online.
The PowerPoint.
The PowerPoint, mm-hmm. So.
Mm-hmm. Will be.
Mr. Mayor, is it essential for us to take any action on this issue?
No, it's not. No action is necessary. However, I would echo the fact that Mrs. McKittrick and the department heads have asked that all of us, if we have any specific questions that we think of over the next week, present those to the city administrator, and as is our policy, the city administrator will respond with the appropriate information and copy all of the aldermen so that we're all receiving the same information at the same time.
And we can come back next Monday well so that the audience can know what those questions and responses are as well.
And we will likely post those questions and answers on the website as
sure,
well.
Sure, we can do that as well.
Yes.
It might be helpful if you would outline the process and how this will move through to eventual approval.
Sure.
As far as the dates, I think would be helpful to the community.
Next Monday, which is a committee of the whole meeting, I would come back with any questions and responses that you may have between now and then. This item, the budget, proposed budget, will be on the committee of the whole for your affirmative recommendation for approval and to schedule the public hearing. If you recommend approval that it advance, move forward next Monday, then it would come back on April 15th with a public hearing followed by an item of business on the agenda for approval.
Thank you.
And there we will have a copy at hard copy also, as well as the digital copy on the city website. We'll have a hard copy downstairs at the reception desk, and we also put one next door at the library as well on April 1st for the public if they want to come in and take a look at that. So,
anyone else before we move on with the agenda? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Item number four, amendments to the agenda. Are there any amendments this evening? I know Mr. Maladra would like to offer an amendment. Mr. Maladra, the floor is yours.
I would like to remove item 11I from the omnibus agenda.
The recommendation is to remove item 11I.
Second.
It is seconded by Alderman Cummings. Any questions or comments regarding that motion? A voice vote is sufficient. All in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Anyone opposed? That item has been removed from the consent agenda. I will also, item number five is the omnibus agenda. All items marked with an asterisk are considered to be routine and can be enacted by one motion and a second.
Second.
Awesome. Enthusiastically offered by Alderman Maladra, seconded by Alderman Flanagan. Questions or comments? A roll call vote is in order. Mr. Clerk, please take the roll.
Don Cummings.
Aye.
Dorothy Flanagan.
Aye.
Sam Hill.
Aye.
Dean Kilberg.
Aye.
Greg Maladra.
Aye.
Richard Marks.
Aye.
Ron Singer.
Aye.
Ron Vogelsberg.
Aye.
Chuck Brown.
Aye.
That motion passes with 9 affirmative votes. We have a question to pose. Item number 9A is a policy discussion on the refuse rate amendment, or we can jump to item 11I, and I would like to ask the council what they would prefer. Mr. Maladra, what's your preference? Mr. Maladra recommends we address item 11I. Mr. Dingus, is that okay? Okay. So without objection, we'll jump down to item 11I. Item 11I is to approve resolution number 2013-38, selling surplus public property lot number 96 of the Fox Run subdivision at a price of $105,000.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Vogelsberg, seconded by Alderman Hill. This matter is now on the floor for discussion. Obviously, I think we have somebody here in the audience. Sir, if you'd like to join me, please. Please come up to the podium. If you could, for the benefit of all of us and those watching at home, we ask that you kindly share with us.
Hello, those watching at home.
Indeed. There's millions, man. I'm telling you. It's amazing.
All right. Wouldn't be the first time.
We kindly ask that you share your name, your address, and spell your last name for the record.
Yes, sir. My name is Paul Stukel, S-T-U-K-E-L.
Thank you, sir.
746 Fox Run Drive in Geneva, Illinois. And, Alderman, I appreciate your helping with that. I appreciate it.
Welcome.
Thank you. And it's nice to be able to talk to you all. I have not been able, actually that's not true. I've been able to talk to you, but I have not been able to get a response from you. I understand that is at the consideration of the city council, which is fine. I'm not sure I agree with it, but that's okay. Look, my concern here is, let me explain. My property is directly adjacent to the property that is being considered for sale, okay? And it is also extraordinarily important to Fox Run subdivision. That subdivision, like most of us, most of our areas, have been impacted negatively by the property market. Lots of lots for sale or houses for sale that have been on the market for quite a while, still there, in fact, quite a few still there. And so this is an important issue to me, so I'll admit that freely from a purely value perspective. It is also, I believe, an important issue to the Fox Valley subdivision, also for purely value-related issues. So yeah, there's a pecuniary issue here. I also think, however, it is important to the city of Geneva the citizens of the city of Geneva, both from a money perspective and also from a process perspective. And I know you all have received my emails. I think I've laid out my arguments reasonably well in those. And frankly, all I've asked is really two things. I've asked for an explanation as to why there has not been a formal process published with respect to this sale. I think that's a very reasonable request from a citizen and from a property holder and from someone who pays a fair amount of taxes. I have not had a response to that. I have also requested that the bid that I put forth, which included an element of what's called contingent consideration, and I'll explain that briefly. It means that it allows upside for the city based on the appreciation of the property going forward. So my bid was a combination of a dollar amount and contingent consideration, basically offering the city 50% of the appreciation of that property in perpetuity to the point where I sold it. That has never been addressed in any of it, and I've requested it many, many times, and no one has given me an answer. I think that's an important part of my bid, and I noticed in the packet that was sent to the committee of the whole that was not indicated. Now, it may have been in the detail, but it certainly wasn't in the summary. So in the public record, at least as far as it's publicly available on the web, it's not there. It just, all it gave was the base price. So I have a problem with that. And I want to make sure you all are aware of the fact that there is contingent consideration here. I'm also very, very worried about the opaqueness of this process, meaning that there have been no processes published. They're basically the only process that I'm aware of is in the mind of the city administrator. I'll give you an example. When I requested information on bidding procedures, the city administrator responded to me that I would have to give $1,000 earnest money to make a bid. Not to enter into a contract, but to make a bid. Now, I'm pretty sure, I may be wrong, I'm willing to be corrected on this, but I'm pretty sure that my competitive bidder, which is John Henry, as you know, Builders, I'm pretty sure they weren't asked for $1,000 earnest money. And maybe, should I ask the question now, or should I just keep going?
I'll defer to you, sir, whatever you prefer. If you like that question answered, we can certainly have it answered.
Excellent. Okay. The reason I doubt that is that about an hour later, the city attorney emailed me hastily correcting the city administrator, oh, no, no, there's no earnest money. Now, that one can draw one's own conclusions from that. But what it certainly speaks to is the fact that there was no procedure. It was basically let it out there. Okay, so that's another issue. And frankly, procedure matters because procedure drives one's bidding strategy. Okay, if you know what the rules are ahead of time, you strategize in order to win the bid. And there were no such publicized procedures, and I think that's troublesome, not only from my own perspective, but to the city. Because the taxpayers of the city obviously want to get the most money out of this, right? The whole point of selling this property, it is of no use to the city anymore. You want to get the most money out of it. I'm a taxpayer. I want to get the most money out of sales of assets, okay? So that strikes me as being a little bit odd. What also strikes me as a little bit odd is the fact that, the fact that there is no sort of auction here. There's no openness to this. I mean, and I, again, I said this in my email. I would ask anybody here, both in the audience and on the dais, when you sell your own property, do you really have just one bid secretly and leave it at that? I don't think so. Usually, you set up an auction to get the highest price. Now, yes, there are certainly other considerations that may go into that process from a municipal perspective, but I asked that specific question to both the administrator and to the city attorney, and they said there were no other considerations. It was purely money. Highest bid. Okay? If you're going to get the highest bid, I would think you'd have a process that would be set up to do that. Wasn't done. At least I don't know if it was done. The reason I don't know is it was never published. We have no idea what happened. So I have a problem with that. I also have a problem with the fact that I asked again and again in writing and also over the phone to the city attorney if there was an escalator clause. And by escalator clause, I mean specifically a within a bid, there is an automatic increase to that bid if someone else exceeds it. That's an escalator clause. What that means is it's an automatic rebid. So if person A puts in $105,000 and person B comes in at $106,000, there's an automatic rebid to to something higher than that for the first bid. That is a rebid automatically. I asked that question several times, never got an answer until after the bid was awarded. And then the city attorney was gracious enough to tell me that there, in fact, was an escalator clause in my competitor's bid. Now, I have no issue with my competitor in this. John built my house. John's a good man. John is following his business. I have no issue with what he has done at all. I do have an issue, however, with the opaqueness of this process. It doesn't... Let's put it this way. It does not smell right in the first place, but it certainly doesn't achieve the benefits to the city, to the citizens of this city, to have such a closed process. And it certainly doesn't do me any good when I'm willing to enter into further negotiations in an open way, in a transparent way. And that has not happened. There are various other issues. I mean, you will note in your packet from the Council of the Whole a contract that is signed by John Henry Developers' representative with it's a contract to enter into this purchase with a date of February on it. So it's been signed by John Henry Developers. It's got a date of February in it. I was notified of the award on March 6th. Well, that's interesting. I wonder how that happened. My point is, I'm not casting necessarily aspersions on anybody. I am saying that this was a haphazard process, if in fact you can even call it a process. And that's wrong, because it may not matter to the city. I mean, we're talking about pretty small numbers for you guys. The city, you know, I saw the budget. You know, you've got a lot more zeros in your issue than I do. But it's a quality of life issue for me. It's also a financial issue for me. I'm a citizen. I've paid roughly $180,000 in property taxes since I've lived here. Now, I know that doesn't all go to the city. My point is, I got a stake in this. And also, the citizens that live in my subdivision are all going to suffer for this. Yeah, okay, if I lose, I lose. If I lose on the merits, if I lose on the amount of money I'm willing to spend, so be it. It's all good. But not this way. So all I am asking for, I'm not asking for you to change anything. I'm asking for a deferral of this decision tonight on item 11I so that we can sort this out in a rational way. Because I don't believe it has been. I believe it's been rushed, and I believe it's been opaque. And I believe that's really, really unfair.
Thank you, Mr. Stuckel.
You're welcome.
You have raised, indeed, a number of issues, and we would like very much to respond to each and every one as best we can and as clearly as we can. In that regard, I would like to introduce our city attorney, Chuck Radovich, and to my further left, of course, is our city administrator, Mary McKittrick, who has been intimately involved.
Yep.
Both these folks have in correspondence and conversations with you, so I think it's only fair that they present, if you will, the city council's perspective regarding this entire matter. So.
Okay.
You can sit down.
And if you'd like, you can remain standing, or you can be comfortable and sit down, whatever you prefer.
Am I? Well, depends on if I'm allowed to respond.
Yeah, you will be allowed to respond once all commentary is presented, if that's okay.
Outstanding.
Thank you very
Thank
much.
You.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You'll be welcome back.
Mr. Mayor and members of the council, my response is similar to the responses I have made to Mr. Stuckel for the past 30 days or more, I believe, or about 30 days. The process, the City Council adopted Resolution 2013-09 on February 4th of this year. That resolution authorized the sale, first of all, the declaration of surplus of this property, and authorized the city administrator to sell the property in a manner in which she could determine as far as solicitation and advertisement. That resolution was not only put on the website, but it was published in the Daily Herald, I believe, the next week. So there was a published notice of the surplus of this property and that it was going to be placed on for sale. That resolution does provide some of the conditions of sale, the processes. The city administrator can respond herself here, but her method of notifying the public of the sale was to first contact the local neighborhood, the association, and she did contact more than a year ago the homeowners association, talked to the president, and the association gave some indication of who might be interested in that property, and she contacted them. In December of last year, she made three independent approaches to contact Mr. Stuckel and his wife, informing them that the property was going to be placed on the market shortly after the City Council made its declaration of surplus, and to see whether they were interested. It is true that in response to those inquiries, there was another bidder who made an offer. That offer was signed, not accepted, because until the City Council approves of an offer, there's no contract. But that offer was tendered with earnest money of $2,500 presented, with an additional $2,500 to be presented upon at a later date, so a total of $5,000 of earnest money. In addition to the resolution, state law, well, let me back up. For a non-home rule community like Geneva, there are two basic ways of selling surplus property real estate. One is a sealed bid where you advertise for bid, and the bids are returned on a certain date, and they're open to see who has the highest bid that meets the specifications. And the other is a negotiated bid. It's also authorized by the Illinois Municipal Code. The City of Geneva has used this method several times, and it provides that if a property is declared surplus and if the municipality obtains an appraisal by a state certified or an MAI appraiser, and obtains at least 80% of the fair market value of the property, that sale can be done through negotiation. It can be done through a licensed real estate broker or a staff member. This City Council elected to use a staff member in the name and person of the city administrator. So it is a process that is authorized by state law. The bids were, it wasn't until mid-February when Mrs. McKittrick received word from the Stuckels that they were now interested. This was about, as I recall, about 3 weeks after receiving an offer from the other prospective buyer. She conferred with me, and we decided to let the Stuckels know that they would have a limited period of time to present a written offer. We were not going to disclose what the other offer was or those terms. And so that was on the 22nd of February. We indicated that we would entertain an offer from them by the 27th of February at noon. In the email correspondence, Mrs. McKittrick indicated that there was no particular form that needed to be provided. It could be done by email. It could be done by letter. She did indicate that she wanted $1,000, but I contradicted that because I felt that until a contract was presented, there was no need to have the earnest money deposited with the city. She also indicated in writing that proposals were not going to be shared and that the best offer would be taken. And the criteria for the sale of the property would be an as-is condition. There would be no survey provided by the city, and that the well house that was on the property would be demolished and removed as provided for in the resolution that was adopted by the city on February 4th. We did receive a proposal from the Stuckels on the 27th. The city administrator reviewed the two proposals and made her recommendation that the proposal by John Henry Builders and Developers would be accepted. The appraisal for the property done prior to this time was for $105,000. That's the appraised value. Both bidders had the availability of that appraisal before they submitted their bid. And the bid of the successful, the one that the city administrator is recommending, met that appraised value. The other bid was at $98,000, $7,000 less. There was an escalator provision in the one bid. The city administrator indicated that she did not take that into account. She was purely looking at the the cash value submitted by the bidder, $105,000 versus the $98,000. Mr. Stuckels already related his contingent consideration, and it was in, I think, in the opinion of the city administrator and myself that the city is really not a real estate company that would be monitoring whether or not a piece of property was sold over the years to determine if that additional contingency would be received or not, and that the cash value was the most important factor in the bid submitted. So I think I've addressed most of the questions that Mr. Stuckel raised. I don't believe, and I told him before, that I didn't think that this was any hidden process. There was a process, and that there was an opaqueness. And believe me, I believe that we had many, many pieces of correspondence back and forth, Mr. Stuckel. I think your questions were answered. Maybe it wasn't the answers that you were looking for, but there were answers given.
Mrs. McKittrick, is there anything you'd like to add? Because for the benefit of transparency, Mrs. McKittrick did share with the City Council earlier today a sequence of events relating to this topic. I'm not certain if the City Administrator wishes to share that for the benefit of all, but the floor is yours, and if you'd like to respond to either any of Mr. Stuckel's direct comments or perhaps expound on what the city attorney has said, feel free to do so.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Because of Mr. Stuckel's personal attack on me, I think that I'm obligated to respond. First of all, I do believe that we outlined, the city attorney and myself outlined the public process very clearly to Mr. Stuckel. We provided him with a copy of the resolution that was passed at a public meeting by the city council and that was posted on the city's website. Nothing was trying to be hidden from him or anyone else. For the past year, over a year, since January of 2012, I have been corresponding and met with Dan Baker, the Homeowner Association president of Fox Run, and working with him, and have offered to sell the lot to the Homeowners Association without putting it on the market for sale to the general public, if they so chose. They chose not to buy that lot. In November, Mr. Baker asked if he could forward my contact information on to Mr. Stuckel because he thought Mr. Stuckel was interested in the lot. I said yes. I sent the appraisal to Mr. Baker, and he forwarded it on to Mr. Stuckel also in November. I didn't hear from him. In December, I made a point to call, and I spoke with Mrs. Stuckel about the property and told her that it was for sale, and offered to provide her with whatever information and documentation that we had that she wanted. She said that I would need to speak with her husband. I called back three subsequent times in December and left lengthy messages with contact information advising that we were going to put the lot on the market for sale, but I wanted to make sure that they had the first opportunity to purchase it if they were interested. Finally, when I did not hear back from them, I brought a resolution to the council and asked for the property to be declared surplus. It was very public. We followed state statutes. I used the wrong terminology in my response to Mr. Stuckel when I said earnest money would be required when he submitted a proposal. Our city attorney said contract rather than proposal. But that is no substantive difference in the process or the outcome of this. It made no difference whatsoever. There was no auction because there is no such thing as an auction with public surplus property. We followed state statutes, and the attorney told you that time and time again in his responses to the email. When we were both asked about the contingencies or escalator clauses in the other proposal, we would not respond. Not only would it be unethical to do that, it would be illegal. So we could not provide you with any terms or conditions of another proposal. And regarding the loss to the citizens, the appraised value of that property was $105,000. That's the offer that I recommended to the city council that they accept the exact appraised value of the property without any consideration to what might happen in the future if that property is sold and if it escalates in price. I wasn't willing to make that recommendation to council because, as we all know, properties don't always hold their value. Sometimes they actually decrease in value. I think we've seen enough of that. So I looked at dollar figures, $105,000 versus $98,000. So everything that was done in public, above board, through state statute processes. So I do take offense in being attacked and saying that the process was in the city administrator's head. I provided you with information. I reached out when I didn't have to do that. And I'm sorry that your bid wasn't what you needed it for it to be in order to acquire the property. But I don't think that personal attacks are necessary. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Yes, Mr. Stuckel, you'd have to join us at the podium, please, sir, so we can capture your comments for the record. Thank you very much.
Okay, I'll have to respond to you there. First of all, Madam City Administrator, I was not attacking you personally. I believe I said I'm not casting aspersions on anyone. I disagree with how you've handled this. That's much different than a personal attack, okay? And if I came across as a personal attack, I do apologize. But everything that the city administrator and the city attorney have talked about, and they talked about at great length, and Mr. Radovich is absolutely right. He sent this stuff to me in an email, a bolded email, as if I had trouble seeing, is nonsense. None of it has anything to do with the questions I'm asking. I'll go through it chapter and verse if you wish. You know, you talk about there was a process. No, there was not a process. The fact that you notified people that this was for sale is not a process. It's a notification. Okay? The city attorney refers to a negotiated bid. What does that mean? The city council delegated the bid to the city administrator. That's not a process. That means the city administrator gets to decide who gets what. Okay? Well, I forgive me.
No, I'm sorry.
You're shaking your
she
head.
She makes a recommendation. We have to vote on it, so it's not
fair
all on her.
Fair
so
enough. Sorry. Fair enough. No, I'm sorry.
I'm expressive.
I just want to make sure I wasn't getting, because I, you know, look, I don't know the law here. The law, it really isn't the issue here, which is why I'm not casting aspersions on you, ma'am. What I'm doing is saying there was not a transparent process. You've actually made my point for you. If everyone reads the transcripts of what you guys just said, forgive me, you guys being the city administrator and the city attorney, you kind of prove my point. The city council gave you the power or whatever, the authority is the right word, to sell the property. That's not a process. That means you get to determine who gets what. Was there ever any public announcement as to what the bidding process was? I don't think there was. I think there was. You've cited chapter and verse, Mr. Radovich, about a lot of things that are irrelevant to what I'm talking about. So, again, I go back to my original point.
But Mr. Stuckel, that
yes, sir.
Resolution clearly said that the city administrator could determine the method of solicitation and advertisement.
Correct.
And
exactly right.
And she selected that method.
What
method? She contacted the association and offered the property to local people first. She contacted the association president, and then she subsequently contacted you and your wife.
Well, I'm unaware of the first part of that, to be very honest with you. I was not told that the Fox Valley Homeowners Association was being offered the bid. But that's irrelevant. It really is quite irrelevant. It may be relevant to my particular situation, but it's not a process. The process should be public, shouldn't it? So that people know what to expect, so that people know that this is available. It was never public. As to your conversations with me or my wife, I don't honestly remember that, and I'm not saying you didn't do it. But that was December. The thing, I really don't remember any of that. And that does, again, it's irrelevant. The point I'm trying to make is, why wasn't there a process involved? And furthermore, another good example. What was important about the February 27 deadline? Where did that come from? Was that just a random date? Because it wasn't published anywhere. I mean, you told me when I inquired about it, February 27th at noon. Why? Why February 27th at noon? Why? In terms of the Your point about Mr. Radovich, your point about the it would or actually I'm not sure which of you, one of you said it, but it would be illegal to inform me about an escalator clause in the opposing bid.
We never said illegal. We said it was ethically improper.
She said illegal.
I said it was ethically improper,
and she said it was illegal just now.
I said it was both.
Okay. If that was not really part of your consideration prior to awarding the bid, if you were strictly looking at the dollar figures, period, one bid, one vote, done, Why would it be unethical to let everyone else know, particularly after I asked multiple times? Why would it be unethical to simply say, you didn't even have to disclose it? Any escalator clauses shall not be considered. I asked many times, even before I put my bid in. How was that unethical? How could it be? You simply make a statement. No escalator clauses will be considered in this bid. But of course, because you didn't have anything written down, because there was never anything published about how this was going to happen, you sort of made it up as you went along.
No, because you had information, sir, from some other source that there was an escalator in the other bid.
Accurate information, as it turns out.
We were not going to disclose that. We're not going to disclose what another offer, another bid was under the circumstances.
I wasn't asking you to disclose that. What I was asking you was the ground rules. I was asking you, Mr. Radovich, the ground rules of the bidding process. And that is a fundamental ground rule, is it not? Is it not? Nope. You told me. Hold on. I've got it in writing, sir. You sent me an email. In fact, I think both of you did. You said there will be one bid, one shot.
And if those bids prove to be equal in amount, we would have a process where we would ask those two bidders,
correct,
or three bidders, whoever number,
correct,
to submit a final bid again, another sealed bid to break that tie.
That is correct. But one of those bids had an automatic rebid in it. And I asked you specifically, and you wouldn't tell me that was the case. You didn't have to tell me that. All you had to tell me was any escalator clause will be void. You didn't have to tell me what the bid was. I wanted to know the ground rules. The point I'm making is there were no ground rules.
And we didn't tell the other bidder about your contingent proposal.
Those are very different things, because my contingent consideration is not a rebid. It's part of the bid. It's a whole different thing. And you know it, sir. You know it.
Mr. Mayor, I think this is the process that's been going on for 30 days, the dispute with Mr. Stuckel as to what the process was. I think the city administrators made a recommendation based upon the appraised value that was done, the negotiations, negotiations that have occurred to date, and it's in the city council's hands to decide whether or not it's in the best interest of the city to accept the proposal for $105,000.
Mr. Stuckel, is there anything else you'd like to add?
There's a lot more, but you have most of it in your hands.
Well, if there is a lot more, we'd love to hear it. I'm certain the public as well. We do have copies of all the correspondence. We have.
That's all I wanted to know.
Okay, we have benefited from many a closed session regarding this matter.
Okay.
We're well aware of the conversations, both electronically and otherwise, between yourself, the city administrator, and the city attorney.
Okay.
We're also well aware that you received information from a third party that, while proved to be accurate, certainly did not come into play with respect to consideration of both bids. I, for one, can speak to the fact that it was cash is king with respect to the bid. But I do want to ask for you to clarify so that the council can consider. Mm-hmm. You made a request earlier that you would like this city council to defer this matter.
That is actually all I'm asking. I'm asking for a deferral. I'm not asking for you to place my bid above.
No, I understand. And what would be the benefit of the deferral, if I may ask?
To be able to discuss this further so that we have a better understanding of where we can go from here in terms of process. Again, I have not had my answers, my questions answered, and this is probably not the right venue to do that.
Would anybody on the council wish to either ask Mr. Stuckel a question and or?
By the way, can I have some of this water?
But I will recognize the other bidder if he or she wishes to comment, but I wanted to defer to the council first with respect to if there's any interest whatsoever in deferring this matter, or if you'd like to address any of the comments made by Mr. Stuckel. Mr. Kilberg.
And two questions of our attorney. What is the city's legal obligation as relates to both parties at this point in time?
I'm not sure what you mean by
it. Essentially, my understanding is the property has not been disposed of at this point.
I beg your pardon?
We have not reached a decision as it relates. We discussed it in the committee of the whole.
And you've made a recommendation.
Right. There was a recommendation to bring to the council meeting, but awarding of the property has not been decided, correct?
Correct.
That's on tonight's agenda, correct?
Right.
And that requires
technically, we have no legal obligation to either party at this time.
That's correct.
But just for the benefit of all those participating, the vote tonight requires a two-thirds of the corporate authority. In other words, seven of the aldermen present and myself voting.
Okay. One other question. As it relates to the disposal of other city property, are there procedures or protocols that are in place for the disposal of excess property, such as a city truck that we're disposing of? How are those handled, if I could ask?
Well, there's different for
different
non-real estate. There's different mediums in which surplus property can be disposed of through the state of Illinois. Dan, okay. State of Illinois. Yes, your i-bidding, electronic bidding process through the state. You can ask for disclosure. There's specific. Most of it is as is on personal property.
I know that I believe in 2011, the city disposed of some property adjacent to the Geneva Country Club.
Yes.
How was that process similar, or how did it deviate from what we're talking about this evening?
Similar, same thing. The city administrator was authorized to.
Okay. Thank you.
Appraisal was done.
Okay, and we had multiple bids, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Anyone else on the dais? Alderman Vogelsberg, Alderman Marks, Alderman Vogelsberg.
Attorney Radovich, what is in those public notices on the Daily Herald? What do those state?
What's in there? Does
it's a resolution.
It's just a copy of the resolution. Right. That's what I thought. I just wanted to make sure I couldn't find it. But it just states that we have declared the property surplus and that it's open for
yeah, it was published on February 5th.
Okay.
The Daily Herald.
Thank you.
Alderman Vogelsberg.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Well, if I say something out of school, you'll have to stop me. But I just want you to be assured that you've been heard and this has been a clean process. You know, when Mary talked to the Homeowners Association, then she called your home four times and left messages. I was like, Mary, get a clue. They're just not that into you. So stop. Like, I felt like she was hammering people to buy the property as opposed to not putting it out there. So when we got our first bid and it was exactly what the appraisal was and the second bid wasn't, to me, that's just business. Logical. No accelerators or whatever, no content. It 105 versus 98, I didn't think there was a discussion. If we did anything differently, I think it wouldn't be in the best point of the citizen. So we got it appraised. She begged people to buy it. We got two offers. One matched the appraisal. So I don't want to defer the vote because I don't see the benefit. Because you now that the bids are out there, we can't reopen it. So you could rebid.
Actually, I think you can. You have you don't have to accept any bid.
No, I'm just saying, like, if this was any other situation, like I go home telling my husband, yeah, we appraised the property $105,000 and we got it, but we're going to reopen it. Maybe we'll get more, maybe we'll get less. We already got it. So, and I feel like she gave you a lot of notice.
Can I ask you a question?
Of course.
Now that we know, subsequent to the award, that there was an escalator clause, as I understand it, up to $112,000. That suggests to me that John Henry was willing to pay $112,000 for this property. So that is the market value, right?
Well,
so the city taxpayers are losing, whatever, $7,000. But 112 is the market value because John Henry is.
That's not, you're making an incorrect assumption.
Why is that?
If your offer had been $106,000,
mm-hmm.
then you could say that maybe there was another market value.
But the market value is $105,000 because that was the highest offer made.
Well, it depends on how you look at it. I mean, if the city was interested in getting the maximum dollar amount here, why wouldn't the city open up the bidding again? There's no reason not to because there is no process that was formally adopted except the process of saying that the city administrator gets to decide. So
no, the city administrator decides nothing. This body does.
In terms of the recommendations.
Right.
Well, that's why I'm talking to this body. I mean, in terms of the recommendations, this body can do anything it wants to do. It doesn't have to accept the bids.
But
it
I guess
say,
what
oh,
I was,
like either one of those bids. I'm gonna open it up again.
I guess what I was trying to say is, at least for me, those are two bids. Why would we not accept them?
Because clearly you can get more. That's why.
Well, we couldn't.
We can now. I mean, my fundamental point in all this is that there has never been an open and transparent process. It has been random from the get-go, and I just don't understand that. Yes, you can say all the things you said about, yes, there was a resolution. That resolution did not describe a process. Yes, the city administrator was delegated the authority to enter into a negotiated bid. Well, I don't know where there's negotiation here. And the city administrator did not tell anybody what the procedure was. So that is my main point. And obviously, I don't want to drag this on much further. We're all going to fall asleep. But that is where I'm at. And I would hope that there could be a deferral here so that the city of Geneva, if nothing else, could get the maximum price for this property.
Alderman Malata. The microphone, sir. Sorry.
I'll just react to the comment about randomness.
Whoops.
Both bidders were asked to submit a bid. Tell us what you want to pay for the property. You gave us a price. The other guy gave us a price. I don't see what's random about that. You chose X as what you thought that property would go for. He chose Y. He chose higher than you chose. It's no more random than the process that we use to bid out cable for cable replacement or whatever else we submit for a bid. It's no different than the process that we used when we sold the land by the country club. And for this council, it's no different than what we discussed doing all along. So I think that we were all clear about what was happening, what was going on. We were going to ask people to submit bids. They submitted bids. We took the highest bid. That doesn't seem random. That seems basic to me. Everything else that you said about the open market dictating your investment strategy and everything else, I agree with that. But all you were asked to do was give us a bid. I don't see how it can get any simpler than that. Tell us what you want to pay for the property. And you did. And it wasn't as high as your competition.
Okay.
That's as basic as the market gets.
Forgive me, Alderman. That is unclear. Again, everyone here is.
Did we ask you for something more?
I beg your pardon?
Did we ask you for something more than a bid?
Other than the earnest money? No.
Agreed.
I also asked.
I'm just reacting to the random.
Well, I understand.
To me, it's basic. It's not random. It's not complicated. Tell us what you want to pay for the property. Bingo. We're done. It can't get any cleaner than that.
Well, actually, forgive me, sir, but I don't agree with you. Which is fine. But I would ask, and we're talking about it now. Mm-hmm. But I did ask, and I believe the city attorney would concur with this. I did ask more than once after I was told that the bid went to John Henry. The rationale for the valuation. Now, everyone here may poo-poo the concept of contingent consideration. That's fine. I mean, that's up to you. But again, going back to the procedural comments, it seems I never got an answer to that. I mean, you just gave me an answer to that. I agree with it, but that's okay. Yeah. We can disagree. I was never offered that, and I never quite figured out why. I mean, it was a very straightforward question. As you point out, it's a very straightforward question. How did you value the two bids? Never got an answer. Not one. Instead, I got the laundry list that Mr. Radovich sent to me via email that he pretty much just recited. Didn't address the issue. Didn't address the escalator. Didn't address any of the concerns that I got. So, again.
Well, I think, Mr. Stuckel, I did say that the mathematics were $105,000 versus $98,000. I did indicate that was the $7,000 difference was material.
Well, I don't know.
I don't know if you used the word material, but I did give you. I did give you those arithmetic.
I asked how
calculations
it was valued, and that there was no response to that. Anyway, we're belaboring the issue here. I would ask for more time to talk about this. But again, I don't want to take everyone's night. We could talk about this all night. So thank you very much for your consideration, folks. I greatly appreciate it. Again, I would really like to make certain that everybody understands that I have absolutely no issues at all with John Henry developers. I mean, none whatsoever. They're doing what they should be doing. And I, to the city administrator, please forgive me. I don't think I cast personal aspersions on you. If I did, I apologize. I disagree profoundly about how this has been dealt with. Thank you all.
Thank you, sir. There is a motion on the floor, and there is a second. Alderman Cummings.
I was just going to recommend that we move to a vote. The deferral, if the deferral is for to examine the process, so it's totally unrelated to the sale, we can talk about process at another time, I think. Maybe that's a good idea. We have 105 versus 98. We have 15 months of time into this. We have several phone calls to the homeowner. We have several phone calls and emails to the homeowner association. I think it's time just to vote.
Is that a motion to call the question?
Please.
Second.
Again, for the benefit of those on the dais and others, this vote requires two-thirds of the corporate majority. That requires seven affirmative votes. And
point of order.
Yes, sir.
Would you clarify exactly what it is we are voting on?
We are voting on executing the sale of surplus property to the highest bidder. That bidder identified as, we all know, Lot 96 in the Fox Run subdivision, have a price of $105,000 to John Henry Home Builders. A representative of John Henry Homes is here tonight as well. Mr. Hill?
Do we not have to vote on the call for the question?
No. A call to the question stifles debate and the vote is taken. So we've pretty much violated that. So.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. City Clerk, please take the roll call.
Microphone.
John Cummings?
Aye.
Aye.
John Hill? Aye.
Jane Gilbert?
Aye.
Greg Aladra?
Aye.
Mark?
Aye.
Don Sayer?
Aye.
Don
Rosenberg?
Aye.
Chuck
Brown?
Aye.
Mayor Burns?
Aye. That motion passes. Without objection, we circle back to item 9A, policy discussion on refuse rate amendment. Mr. Dinges, welcome back to the podium. Do you want a light off or anything, Dan, or are you good?
Yeah, maybe.
Okay. No, God, no. That's just anybody but DeVita.
I got the right switch memorized.
All right, tonight I'd just like to, if you recall, back in October, we had a policy discussion on the refuse fund. I want to kind of recap that and discuss it a little bit further to see how to proceed with the budget. If you'll recall, the current fee is $405 per month. This includes three collections of leaves, two pickups of brush per month for every household. It also includes administration of the fund, which is not only leaves and brush, but it's the electronics collection. It's the solid waste contract, which is currently out the bid. Household hazardous waste, it's managing all those different aspects. As we discussed back in October, we have contracts on leaf and brush with Kramer Tree Service. Those have increases in them. We need to increase the fund the fee to cover the fund. The fee currently is going to residential properties, commercial and industrial do not pay it. However, some of the downtown businesses are receiving the service but are not paying into that fee. Also, it's not consistent as far as how it's applied to the multifamily. Some are paying, some are not. Some are receiving the service, some are not. As Mary discussed during the budget presentation, one aspect that we're looking at is street sweeping outsourcing street sweeping. We currently have a street sweeper. It's in need of repair in the neighborhood of $30,000. It's around 10 years old, so it's actually in need of being replaced. A new sweeping machine. The current estimate is about $235,000 for that piece of equipment. And then there's the ongoing maintenance of that equipment, the fuel, the disposal of the material that the sweeper picks up. We put the outsourcing street sweeping out to bid. I actually received proposals on Friday, and for street sweeping public streets, and it also includes the downtown, a weekly downtown sweeping, which is what we try to do with our sweeper. And then it's roughly every 6 week collection of all the residential, other public streets. That bid came in at just under $70,000 a year. That number was plugged into the refuse fee budget that Mary presented earlier. We're still reviewing the budget. We got three proposals, so we're still going through it to make sure, so nothing's definitive at this point, but that's where the low proposal came in at. And the key to thing to remember in a lot of the discussion we had back in October is who should receive the fee. Should it be spread across everybody, all customers, including residential, commercial, and industrial, or should we pinpoint it to just the residential? And in future, I'll show kind of where those prices are. But the benefit for all customers is if we incorporate street sweeping, it keeps all the public streets swept and clean. The electronic recycling is available. We manage that. The solid waste contract is managed. The household hazardous waste is also managed by city staff. That's a program that we're working with the county on. Hopefully we'll be able to get that incorporated. As you know, the county has put their household hazardous waste program on hold. They used to have that collection a couple times a year at the King County Fairgrounds. Due to cost, they put a hold on that, but they're trying a different thing right now. And that'll be a later thing that we'll bring to you probably next fiscal year. But overall, it's a benefit to all the properties within the city to help keep Geneva clean. Summary of the costs. As I said before, the current fee is $405 per month. That's the current program, and that represents 7227 customers. If we were to change it to just single family, that one has a mixture of the multifamily, some commercial are in there. If we were to just apply it to single family, you can see that drops down to roughly 7,000 accounts, and that would raise the fee to $485 versus what we're recommending to keep the program as is right now, no street sweeping. We're looking at $475 a month. If we were to include all customers, that's roughly 10,000, you see the fee would then be applied across the board, and it drops it to $338. If we include the street sweeping, based on the $70,000 budget, the current program, $558 would be the per month charge. If we go to single family only, it would raise it to $570 a month. However, if we apply it across the board, the fee would be $397 a month. So overall, it'd be a decrease from the 405 that we're at right now. So I wanted to bring this to your attention and find out which way you would like to move forward. We had a lot of discussion last time, and I heard pros and cons for both. Kind of put it out there and see what your feedback is, if there's something else that you would like me to look at.
Alderman Maladra, and then Alderman Singer. One second, Craig. Do you want to add something to this before?
Just a couple of points that I thought might
microphone, if you could. That would be awesome.
Points that I thought perhaps if Dan could speak to, number one, the cost of replacing the sweeper, and because we are at the point where we need to replace it, and the annual cost for maintenance. And also there was an additional cost for sweeping parking lots in addition to this base fee, correct?
Correct.
So if you could just speak to those as well.
Sure.
Thank you.
Over the past 10 years for this, our street sweeper, we've been averaging somewhere in the neighborhood of $12,000 a year in maintenance. As I said, right now we're looking at about a $30,000 bill to get it operational for this coming spring. There's also disposal costs, which is around $10,000 a year. We have to bring the sweepers, picks up that debris that needs to be hauled to the landfill. That's the cost to bring it there. And then fuel costs are around $6,000 a year. Labor is in the neighborhood of, it's about an eighth month. 8 months we're able to sweep, and that's roughly $55,000 in wages. That total is about $83,000 a year for ours. The new unit is $235,000. As far as street sweeping, I did have an alternate in there for parking lot sweeping. This would be all commuter and public parking lots. We currently do not do a regular sweeping of the parking lots. We do have our streetscape crew that goes through and picks up the trash and that. But if we were to have the low bid sweep the lots, and it's all depending on how we have a per event, so we could have it done as many times as we want. I based it on eight times, and that's roughly $12,000. So that would be above and beyond the $70,000 that we could look at. I think the commuter portion could be brought out of the commuter fund, however. I think that covered the questions. Are there questions?
Alderman Maladra, Alderman Singer, then Alderman Flanagan.
So I was just looking at my notes from back in October, and one of the options, or one of the questions you asked us tonight, is who should be charged, and one of the options is everyone. Back in October, though, when we talked about charging everyone, you expressed a concern that that might drive the demand for service up. We'd have to service areas we don't currently. So the cost models you've put together, does that cover the possible increase in demand?
The service would stay the same. The brush and leaf would be on public streets. We would not have our contractor go on to private property, commercial, industrial, multifamily in those areas. So the service would stay the same. So not every business or every customer would receive the exact same service, but it would be a fee to maintain Geneva's infrastructure. It's a requirement. Part of the street sweeping, why that was brought up, is part of the city's obligation under the Illinois EPA NPDES stormwater permit is part of our maintenance is we have to keep our streets clean, because that debris goes into the, gets washed into storm sewer, which then goes into the water, into the Fox River or any of the ponds. So it's part of our process of keeping the roads clean. We're doing it in-house right now. We're proposing outsourcing that.
Thanks.
Alderman Singer.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Dan, what consideration have you given to the associations that provide similar services as regarding brush pickup? Are we going to be seeing, are they going to be expected to a cost involved for them as well?
Yes. Every customer would be charged a fee. I see it as the argument, I guess, is for the multifamily or the commercial that may not receive the service, at least that portion of the service.
Right.
They still would have the other portions of the refuse fee. It's no different than the people in the downtown area that have very mature trees, have lots of brush and lots of leaves. They're getting a better bang for their buck versus the ones out west and the newer subdivisions that have smaller trees, very little leaves, very little brush. It's no different than that. That's the way I look at it. Again, it's a fee to keep Geneva clean. Everybody gets to pay for that.
So then there's going to be a certain area of the city that there will not be any brush pickup at all.
The entire city would be picked up the same way it is right now.
Just as it is now.
Existing program would remain the same. We're in the middle of a contract.
Right.
If we were to change it at all, we would have to seek new, basically seek an addition for that. So the leaf program and the brush program would remain as it has the last several years. They would pick up brush and leaves on all public streets.
And what is that fee presently?
$405 a month.
$405. That's what it is presently today.
That's the current fee. What we're suggesting is if we keep the program as is,
yeah.
In order to meet the increases in the contracts, we need to go to $475 a month. And this fee would be locked in for 3 to 4 years. The contracts expire in 3 years, so we definitely would have the current rates that we're showing here would meet the three-year minimum, but we're also looking at the possibility of carrying that fee for one additional year. So 3 to 4 years, it all depends on where those new contracts come in at.
The present contract we have is expiring at what point in time?
The brush expires in fiscal year 15-16. The leaf expires in 14-15. In order to get those on the same schedule, we'll be seeking an extension for 1 year for the leaf program so that matches the brush program. We can bid those at the same time in the future. So they would expire in April of 2016.
And upon an expiration date, what would the fee be from that point on?
Right now, what we're looking at is if we stay with the program as is, it'd be $475. If we change it to include sweeping and charge everyone, it would be $397.
And is that contract withstanding for, a 2 or 3 year period? We could expect that would be the cost for that length of time?
Which contract?
The street
sweeping?
Yeah. No, the brush pickup.
The overall refuse
contract?
The overall refuse fee would hold through April 2016.
Okay.
Potentially April 2017.
Right. All right.
And that would cover the brush, the leaf increases over the next every year, including the latest street sweeping proposal.
Okay. Thank you, Danny. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
You're welcome. Alderman Flanagan, then Alderman Hill.
Okay, I think I understood what you said. a little confused, but maybe it'll clarify itself. In the package, you said $80,000 a year, but then you said $70,000 because you came in as a low bid?
We got the low bid, and there's also the discussion on whether we want to include the parking lots or not.
Oh, right. That's another $12,000.
Right.
Okay. How does our street sweeper attack private streets? They don't.
They don't.
Okay. Would those private street people be involved in the everyone?
Yes.
What about condos?
Same.
Okay. Everyone. So you're in the industry. And then you made some reference that some downtown retailers are actually getting this service but not necessarily paying for it either.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Alderman Hill, then Alderman Kilberg, then Marks.
And Dan, what about this the sweeper itself? We talked this afternoon on the phone. Now, is the cost of a new sweeper involved in this rate at $397?
No.
Or whatever? Okay. So that would
We don't have it in the budget.
You don't have it in the budget now. So and even keeping it at this $397, you would be trying to maintain the current sweeper that you have.
The $397 incorporates outsourcing street sweeping, so a contractor is going to perform that service for us.
Okay.
Similar to the brush and leaf program.
So we can get everything done at $397.
Correct.
For how long?
For till April 2016, potentially April 2017.
Sounds like a pretty good deal. For $4, it's less than what we're paying now, but we're going to be getting service.
Right. It's a decrease for all those people that are currently paying it. It's a decrease, decrease. It's a new fee for the ones that are not
paying. Yeah, well, they should be paying.
Which majority of those are commercial and industrial properties.
And how are you going to be able to enforce that for those people that are not paying?
It'll be on the utility
bill. On their utility bill, okay. Right. That sounds like a good deal.
Anything else, Sam?
I'd like to make a motion.
Oh, hold on. We got Alderman Kim.
I go from a good deal to a good motion.
Your dance at the Stars Championship is going to your head.
What's the process, Mr. Mayor?
Alderman Kilburg and then Alderman Burks.
So, in other words, anyone that has a utility bill, electric, water, sewer, would be assessed to $397,
correct.
Right? Okay, my question also would be as relates to the equity in the sweeper and how that will be applied. In other words, we have you said a new one, a replacement would be about $235,000. You have $30,000 in repairs with our existing sweeper. Okay, if our sweeper is worth, it should be worth at least $100,000 to someone. What do we do with the differential there, the equity that we've invested already in the existing sweeper?
That's a good question. I have not factored it. What we did when we did the leaf outsourcing, we applied the leaf machines and applied that towards the rate. I have not factored that in because we're not comfortable with the number on whether it's 100,000 or whether it's 50,000, and that's a big range. But we could put that thing out to bid, get prices back, and then we could decide, City Council could decide what they want to do with that. They could apply it towards the fund to lower that rate. That would be up to your decision.
I think it's important that we know what the equity might be in it because that would give us some options to defer or to do some things here that we might not be able to do if it's worth $130,000. We might want to do something different than if it's only worth $30,000.
I think it's probably closer to 50 or less based on our
It's
mechanics.
Essentially not worth anything is what you're saying.
50.
We found that out with our leaf equipment, right? So I think it would be good to know that at some point in time. I guess my question would be is, could we rename this something other than what it currently is? Because if it's a beautification fee or something, I think it's something different than. I guess I always get upset if you're charging me a fee for something that I'm not benefiting from. I think your point that you're keeping Geneva clean and appealing as a community, I think that could be explained a little bit differently than. I'm going to assess you fees that you're not going to get a benefit from, and it gets to be a little bit more nebulous. Thank you.
Alderman Flanagan, you wanted to...
I just want to comment on what Alderman Kilburg said. I don't think I would say beautification, though.
I knew you were going to say that. I knew it.
I don't know why she knew that.
Alderman Marks, then Alderman
unless
Brown.
Unless the committee does get that certain percentage of those funds.
You have a better term.
But then we could patent that beautification name.
Dan, just to go, the current program realistically is all residential, some condo associations. That's really all that is, correct, right?
There
now?
Are a few commercials in there.
But
yeah.
Per se, it's that. The option right. one is only single families, no condos, no homeowners, no townhomes.
Just single families.
Single
right.
family only. And the option two, just so I'm right, that's everyone who gets a utility bill.
Correct.
Okay. So whether there's three meters on one building, each one of those meters are going to get the bill.
Each, yep.
Okay. Right. I just wanted that clarification. That was all done. Alderman Brown.
Thank you. I was going to ask a similar question to Alderman Marks. I understand once we branch into commercial industrial, it gets confused because some properties have more than one electric meter, some properties have more than one water meter. Sometimes the water bill goes to the landlord, sometimes to tenants, et cetera. It gets very confusing as to what you mean by everyone. Single family residences, we know how to count 1, 2, 3, 4, but once we get in commercial industrial, what would be your definition of everyone? Delmar Hospital counts as one. They have 32 different meters.
It's per meter.
So a business that happens to have three electric meters for historic reasons about where the electricity came in when they put an addition on their building would end up paying three times, et cetera. There is a complication. I understand it's built into the system. You can't do it in a town this old. There are so many, once you get into duplexes and condos and apartments and basement apartments and things, it gets very complicated as to who has a meter and who doesn't. I can think of one more reason that it makes sense in a way to spread this over everybody, yeah. if I can figure out what the definition of everybody is. You mentioned keeping the city beautiful. You mentioned we have certain obligations under environmental concerns to keep the city streets clean. I've also understood in the past that the amount of money we spend cleaning the storm sewers would go up if we stopped sweeping the streets. The number of blockages, the number of times people have to wade their cars through 2 feet of water because the storm sewer system is blocked, et cetera, would escalate if we stopped sweeping the streets. And every fall, of course, we try to make a lot of noise about people keeping their leaves out of the gutters so they don't block the sanitary system, the storm sewer. It only works partially. But the street sweeping is part of that whole process, and it applies to everyone. Everyone in the city benefits if during a rainstorm we don't end up with flooded cars and rusted bottoms of our vehicles, et cetera. So that, to me, is another reason that applying it to everyone, along with the beautification. I don't see any way we could spread that onto the budget of the Water and Sewer Department in any other way than just saying it must apply to everyone. But again, I think we... Before you bring this back to the council in terms of an actual ordinance, I'd like to see the definition of everyone looked into very carefully by the people who run the utility systems, because I mean, past years on the council, I've had access to those, and it's extremely complicated when you get to these properties that are not single family, exactly how many meters there are and what kind of meters, et cetera. Thank you.
Alderman Hill.
I would like to make a motion, Mr. Mayor.
Well, let me ask if anyone in the audience is A, either awake, or B, has any comments to make regarding this discussion. Just for your benefit, we did begin the discussion this past October, and obviously tonight continues the discussion. We are seeking a recommendation from the City Council tonight to provide Dan and Mary so they can appropriately plug in the numbers. Obviously, Mr. Kilberg's comments are... need to be considered as well. But anyone in the audience have any questions at all for the... Yes. Come up to the microphone if you could, sir.
My name's John Sabrinsky. Could Mr. Hill vote, please?
No. I don't like your attitude, Sabrinsky. Anyone else in the audience? Yes, sir. Come on up if you could. I'm sorry I can't see that far in the dark. Forgive me.
Carl Eberle.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good.
The great pilot Carl Eberle.
Just one comment.
What's your address, Mr. Eberle?
742 Fox Run Drive.
Thank you, sir.
The other side of the well house.
Ouch.
But interesting discussion on this. And just one thought. I don't know what's been given on that and how everybody else feels. But as far as the brush pickup,
yes, sir.
Twice a month is really generous and good. But if we're looking for a place to reduce fees, for me, once a month would be good, and I have quite a few trees and such, but once a month, I think most cities do it about once a month. I'm not sure, but just a thought of saving money.
Thank you. I would like Dan to address that particular comment. Thank you, Mr. Eberle.
Yes, that is one way that we can adjust. If you remember back when we first got in the brush collection, that option was out there. And at the time, the city council opted for 2 times a month. So I don't think we can do it until we're done with this contract, but in 3 years, I think that's definitely something that we can talk about and find out what the city council desires.
I thought at the time the argument was made that the bid is based basically on volume, and it's not clear the volume would change that much if you went from once a month to twice a month or vice versa, and that the companies that bid typically bid on the total volume of refuse that they have to pick up or leaves or whatever it is.
Yeah, they're looking at that, but at the same time there would be a savings because they're only driving the city once a month as opposed to twice.
I know at the time the argument was that would probably be fairly small, and that's why the council decided to go with twice a month.
And I don't know if there was a storm or something, whether that factored
I think
into
was the discussions
or...
back then, is if you have a storm, and of course that storm happens right after they went through, now they got to wait a month to get it. But you could have options in there in a new contract that if you had a storm, they would have to respond and you would pay an extra fee for that, or you know that there's a lot of different ways you can do that.
But currently, because the contract states twice a month, we have to honor that contract until that contract expires. Okay. So, Carl, just bring over your stuff to Sam's house.
Okay.
Just go.
If I could add one more thing, if you can hear it.
Yes, sir.
When I moved here, we had twice a week garbage pickup.
I remember that. Especially during the summer. It was awesome, wasn't it?
Yep.
We do change.
Yes, we do.
Now, Coach?
Anyone else in the audience? Any comments or questions regarding this discussion? Mr. Hill.
I'd like to make
this
a
is
motion.
A direction, just so you know. I think you can provide direction to the council, and then we'll seek consensus from that.
That's right. I'd like to make a motion that we go for option number two for everyone who, receives a utility bill, be charged $397 and receive the services that are appropriate.
Mr. Melotta, what was that?
Isn't it premature to specify the dollar amount?
I would not specify a dollar amount because we don't know the value.
I'll just say option two. I'll change it to option two.
Okay, option two, which is, in essence,
everybody,
all 10,000 meters are billed accordingly for not only brush, not only leaf, but also for
street sweeping.
Sure.
Okay.
An electronic whatever.
Electronic recycling. Electronic recycling. Household hazardous waste and solid waste.
Does anyone disagree with that direction offered by Mr. Hill? I mean, I don't know if we have...
The motion is to provide the staff with direction to come back with an actual proposal.
Correct.
Thank you.
Fine.
Mm-hmm. Is there consensus in that direction?
Yeah. Yeah.
Does anyone wish to offer an alternative direction?
Don't we need a second on that, or is it just...
No, I think just direction is sufficient. Yeah, as long as we have consensus, it's fine.
Fine.
Dan, are you
I
comfortable
hope that's
with the
right process?
Thank
you. Finally got a smile out of her.
Thank you, Mr. Dinges. We're at new business, ladies and gentlemen. Anyone? Oh, forgive me. I'm sorry. We're on bills for payment. Good God. That would have been.
Oh, almost.
All our lights would have gone off and everything else. I invite our city clerk to read the bills for consideration tonight.
And bills for payment total $2,592,226.
Mr. Mayor, I move that we approve the bills and pay the bills as read. The invoices that add up to that total can be found in the city packet on the city website.
Second.
Alderman Brown makes the motion. Alderman Flanagan makes the second to pay the bills as considered and as they appear on the city's website and in our packets this evening. Any questions or comments regarding the bills as presented? Mr. Clerk, please take the roll call.
John Cummings.
Aye.
Dorothy Flanagan.
Aye.
Sam Hill.
Aye.
Dean Kilberg.
Aye.
Craig Maladra.
Aye.
Richard Marks.
Aye.
John Singer.
Aye.
Don Vogelsberg.
Aye.
Chuck Brown.
Aye.
Motion passes with 9 affirmative votes. New business. Anyone from the audience, any new business this evening? From the dais?
Yes, sir. I have some.
Oh, God. Okay, Mr. Malaga, then Ms. Flanagan.
I guess the
Flanagan, good work.
Raising your hand doesn't do anything anymore.
Alderman Malaga.
I'm first? Okay, so I just wanted to remind everybody on the council, everybody in the audience, and anybody who's still watching on television that the city is seeking applicants to fill the aldermanic seat vacated by the unfortunate passing of Alderman Dantino. We released a press release a few weeks ago. I thought if I could, I'd just read it tonight.
Certainly.
Okay. The City of Geneva is seeking applications for appointment to a two-year term as Fifth Ward Alderman. The successful candidate will be appointed by the mayor and city council at the second council meeting in May 2013. Applications should be submitted to my attention at the City of Geneva, 22 South First Street, Geneva, Illinois, no later than April 12th. Please include a resume and a short letter of introduction explaining why the candidate is seeking the appointment and the important issues they believe the city is facing. Candidates may be requested to attend an interview with myself and Third Ward Alderman Don Vogelsberg. Three nominations will be submitted to the mayor, from which he will choose his recommendation to the city council. Applicants must have lived in the Fifth Ward for at least 1 year, be a registered voter, and comply with all other requirements as set forth in the Geneva City Code of Ordinances and the Illinois compiled statutes. Candidates should be prepared to commit the time necessary to learn the issues, facts, and communicate with constituents, city staff, and fellow members of the city council.
Thank you. That's it,
unless we have questions.
Alderman Vogelsberg.
Oh, thank you. I just wanted us to...
Wait, I got one more thing. I'm just messing with
you. Okay. Wait, let me put my ringer back on. I just wanted to all wish Alderman Singer a happy birthday. Thanks for staying.
Tomorrow's the big day. Would you care to share with the audience?
Thank you. Nothing to share. Just getting better looking at every year.
That's right.
And more modest.
Yes.
Yeah.
Any other new business from the dais? The motion to adjourn is in order.
So moved.
Offered by Alderman Marks.
I didn't see your hand.
And seconded by Alderman Hill. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Good night, everyone.
You got it.